I have never had an identity problem. I've always known that I'm from Poland and I belong here. But at the same time, I felt very at home in Japan.
Toko Anna grew up with her Polish mother and Japanese father in communist Warsaw in the 70s and 80s. She exudes a strong sense of belonging and comfort, which she explains, accompanied her ever since she was a little child taking the Trans-Siberian train with her family to visit the relatives in Japan. You're about to listen to our conversation here on Cross Continentals, a podcast about multilingual people with parents from different continents. And this is season one, which focuses on what's it like to be Japanese Polish. A quick note from me. Towards the end of the interview, when I say all Asians were Chinese, I meant that back then, many Polish people I encountered, when they saw an Asian-looking person, they called them Chinese. Toko Anna, we used to be neighbors in the 1980s in Poland, in Warsaw, but I was about 3, 4, 5 years old. You were in your early teens. We don't remember each other very well, and we just reconnected for this podcast. And I am really curious, what was your home like in Warsaw back then? What do you remember from your childhood?
It was a three-generation home. We lived with our Polish grandparents. It was a home in Poland, but quite Japanese. We had tatami mat in my parents' bedroom. Many, many Japanese books and toys. And because at that time there were very few Japanese residents in Warsaw, my father, who is an academic at Warsaw University, he was one of that contact persons that Japanese people visiting Poland were told to get in touch with, because it was said that my father will explain, help, and be the person that you can rely on and ask questions. So we had many Japanese visitors, and it was a very open home in that sense. We spoke only Japanese with my parents, and of course Polish with my grandparents, who didn't understand it in Japanese. So it was, maybe exotic place in Warsaw, and my friends like to visit us to experience something unknown, exotic and Japanese, yes.
You may not know the answer to this question, but in the 70s and 80s, the economy was really terrible in Poland and people couldn't even get like basic goods. And I wonder, how did your parents get tatami mats?
I think it was passed on from Japanese residents who stayed for a while in Warsaw, I don't know, maybe at the embassy of Japan or something like that, and they didn't need it going back to Japan, so they got it as a present, goodbye present from someone. I think it was that.
That's incredible, because tatami is such a specific thing. Even in Japan, when you get them, they have special people who are skilled in making them, and it's not something you can just go to like a store and get.
Yes.
So it's kind of neat that you had that growing up back then. Did you play Japanese games? I know that you had Japanese books, because I used to get them from you. Your dad would bring them over once you grew out of them. But what was this sort of childhood game, storytelling, book reading environment like at home?
Because learning Japanese was the priority for my father, for my parents. So we were allowed to read as much manga as we wanted, play as much games on family computer, Famicom, as we wanted. And we got a lot of these materials and games from Japan, from our family, but also from Japanese residents living in Warsaw. So we were allowed to read as much and play as much just to learn more and more fluent Japanese.
It sounds like your parents were very dedicated to making sure you learn Japanese.
Yes, yes. So we, our grandmother from Japan sent us these periodics for Japanese pupils. Like every class, every level at elementary school got its own periodic, and it was a monthly periodic, and there were Japanese texts, and you could cut out paper toys and play with it, and it was also learning by playing. So we got all of this, and also we recorded and got tapes with Japanese songs. And I remember my father writing down the song lyrics on WAPRO, word processor, and printing it out. And we were learning those songs, singing together. So yes, my parents were very dedicated. But thanks to that, we can speak Japanese.
It makes you realize how much work goes into it. When you say periodics, I think you mean magazines, right?
Like you would have magazines. Yes, of course.
Excellent. I'm actually surprised that you had a computer back then, because we're talking 80s, 90s, right?
Word processor we got in the early 90s, I think. And it was also a big attraction for my friends from school who came to see how this miracle, magical typewriter works.
What about food? Did you have Japanese food at home?
Yes, our friends and family sent us Japanese food from Japan. We also got some from Japanese residents. My father traveled sometimes to the West Berlin and bought some Japanese food. And also my mother tried to cook Japanese food using ingredients that you could buy at Polish shops. She learned Japanese recipes and did a lot of effort, but it was also always very tasty and, real Japanese food.
That is incredible, because your mom was a Japanese expert, so she was teaching Japanese and she studied it for many years. Do you know how her love of Japan and interest in Japan started?
It started with Kurosawa Akira movies. And as I heard from her, she saw his movies at the movie festival in Warsaw. And then got interested in Japanese culture and decided that she wanted to learn more.
Amazing. And that just led to a career and a life with Japan in it.
Yeah, I think it was the love of her life. Japan and Japanese culture. Yes.
And your dad.
Yes, of course. Of course. Yes.
But you never went to a Saturday school, a Japanese Saturday school, am I right?
Yes. We went to music school, and I was playing the piano, and my brother was playing the cello and the piano, and we had to practice a lot. So it was already much work and little time to play. So I think my parents decided that they that I dedicated to teach us Japanese enough, mm-hmm. so not to send us to the Japanese school.
And you decided to study Japanese at school, correct?
Yes.
At university.
Yes, and that was not because I could speak Japanese and I could read Japanese, but mainly furigana, which is hiragana, not kanji, not Japanese characters. And I decided that I want to connect my future somehow with Japan. But to do that, it won't be enough to read hiragana. So I decided that I have to study more. I learn properly kanji and to write. So that was the decision I made.
You went to, I believe, Warsaw University, right? To study
yes.
Japanese language. And was it during that time that you went to Japan as a student?
It is the program for Japanese culture and language learners. So it's for not postgraduate, but for students learning Japanese. 1 year scholarship. I passed the exam at the embassy. And I went there for 1 year to learn Japanese and Japanese culture. It is a program that gathers students from around the world.
And was it funded by the Japanese government then? Because
yes,
you said
yes,
you did an exam.
Yes, it is. It was. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I see. So you take time off from your regular Polish school and you basically go to Japan funded by the Japanese government.
Yes, that's it.
And how long was that?
It was 1 year.
Was that your first time living in Japan for a longer period of
yes,
time?
Yes, it was my first time. And I lived in a dormitory for a year. And the campus, it was Tsukuba University. It's about 60, 70 kilometers from Tokyo. We lived mixed up with Japanese students, not in the separate dormitory for scholarship students. So it was fantastic because we could meet at any moment, riding bicycles all year, and I fully enjoyed my students' life there. And there was not so very much learning. We had lessons, of course, but it wasn't a few hours a day. It was two or three hours a day, and we could just study, go to the library. And at the end, we had to write the final report.
Sounds like you had a lot of free time to kind of go and explore and try different things, correct?
Yes, it was a very fun time. No cell phones, and we had this internal line, telephone line, so we could call everybody at any time. But it was enough, and we just hang around after classes and went to dinners together, but also traveled to Tokyo, of course, and at the free time, we explored Japan.
Did you ever consider living in Japan more permanently after that?
Frankly speaking, no. I don't know. It's hard to explain, but I've always known that I would live in Poland. And I wanted to visit Japan regularly, but I was sure that I would live in Poland somehow.
That is incredible. Do you know where does that strong sense come from?
First of all, my family lives here. My parents and my brother. That isn't an obstacle to live in Japan, of course. In Japan, I have a family too. But I have never had an identity problem. Where do I belong? Where I come from? I've always known that I'm from Poland and I belong here. But at the same time, I felt very at home in Japan. I am going there like I am going home. But this bigger half, I know it's not proper, but this bigger half in me is Polish, I think. And that was the model of life. I think naturally I felt would be the best for me.
You have a very strong sense of grounding. And not even in Poland, in Warsaw, I think itself, right? Because I think you spent most of your life in Warsaw, yes. Right? Like, if not all of it. So that is really fascinating. You must meet other Japanese, Polish, or just mixed people. And the sense that often comes with that is that sense of, you know, living in multiple places, going to different places, living part of your life in one place, then another part in another place. How does that feel to you? Does that feel to you foreign, strange? You know, do you feel like they approach this very differently than you?
It's difficult to explain, but Japan in me and this Japanese culture and language was always something very, very mine. I don't know if you understand. It was a part of me, but it wasn't the reason to, for example, look for people who are Japanese Polish like me. It was enough to be me and, of course, have Polish and Japanese friends. The Japanese part of me wasn't the reason to gather people like me around.
It's fascinating. You know, and I don't know if it's generational in a way as well, because you did a lot of your growing up before the internet. I mean, I'm just, you know, extrapolating here, but internet, I think, sort of makes you more interconnected with different places, right? And then you start comparing. Whereas if you don't have the internet, you're in one place.
Yes.
And you're more planted in it because there's less of that connection with other places. I mean, obviously you still had, you know, things coming from Japan to your home. You still had language at home and so on and so forth. But you were living in Poland and that sense of that was probably fairly strong. Does it mean that you were very comfortable in your environment in Poland growing up as a half Japanese, half Polish kid in Warsaw?
Yes, I think so. The reason I had no many friends, Japanese Polish friends, may be that I grew up in the time where internet didn't exist and we had no connection with whole world. So I knew maybe 3 or 4 families, mixed families, and we of course we knew them and we visited each other, but it wasn't so close relation. So I felt very comfortable, yes, with my friends, in my environment. And going to Japan was also very attractive and I liked it very much. And there I was welcomed not as a gaijin, but as a member of family.
How was that? How were those childhood trips to Japan like?
Oh, first of all, it took 4 days to get there. Maybe you know that. We traveled by 2 planes, 1 train through Siberia and then the ship. So when we got to Japan after 4 days...
Wait, can I stop you? Why did you have to take the train through Siberia to go to Japan?
We traveled through Soviet Union. I think it was the cheapest way for 4-member family to travel to Japan. And it was the way that many, many Japanese and Polish people used. It was also, long way, but very safe because in the Soviet Union time, all passengers were watched very carefully. And weren't allowed to leave the path. So we were very confident that we will be on time on our planes and we won't lose our way. And it was for children, it was an adventure. But I think for parents, it was a little bit nightmare. Yeah. Traveling with 2 little children or 2 small children, yes.
So was it like... you know how when you go to North Korea, you have minders that take you only to certain places and watch you and make sure that nothing happens to you. Was it a little bit like that going through Soviet Union? They basically had designated people to watch over the quote-unquote foreigners and make sure that they get to where they need to?
Yeah, it was. It was. So we stayed in Moscow for 1 night. It happened once. And then in the morning, we went on a bus tour for 1 hour, I think, and we could watch Moscow, but from behind the windows. We weren't allowed to get off to take photos or anything like this. So we were watched carefully, and not to lose our transit way to Japan and back.
That's fascinating. It's such a cool way to travel. So you're basically seeing the route as you go. So much more interesting than nowadays when you just hop on the plane and, you know, you're there.
It took 8 days to go and come back. So it's only the trip took that long. So nobody has that much time today. Because it took 4 days, for me as a child, Japan was at the end of the world. I thought that there is no further land than Japan. And it was the time when the Polish economy suffered from many deficiencies and shortages, as you know. So the Japan appeared to me like as a land of plenty. There was so much everything. And of course, for me as a child, the most important thing that was that there were so many sweets and toys and so many relatives who spoiled us because they didn't see us for so long. So it was a heaven.
And how long did you stay in Japan on those trips if it took so long to get there?
About 2 months. In Poland, in Polish schools, summer vacations last for 2 months, and we went there for full 2 months.
What kind of stuff did you get up to while you were there?
We traveled a lot. We traveled from Hokkaido to Kyushu because my father, as a contact person for Japanese people in Warsaw, he made many, many friends from all around Japan. And when we went there, they all wanted to invite us. So we traveled a lot, and it was very interesting, but quite tiring for a child, because we stayed two or three days in one place, and I made friends there. And after those 2 or 3 days, we had to move. So I had to say goodbye to my new friends and make new ones in a new place. So it was a very busy time.
But you got to see a lot of Japan this way, I'm guessing.
Yes, yes, a lot. We went, as I said, from Hokkaido through Honshu, Shikoku and Kyushu. The only place I have never been is Okinawa.
You've continued being in the Japanese environment in Poland, and you became a translator and interpreter. And in a way, you followed in the footsteps of your parents. Your mom was also a very well-known Polish-Japanese translator and interpreter. Your dad is a Japanese professor in Warsaw. Do you feel like your career was a conscious choice, or was it something that you almost were ushered into because of your parents?
I have to correct, because my mother was a literature translator, but she didn't work as an interpreter. And I think my parents expected me to stay at the university and become an academic and maybe a successor of one of them. But I, in a way, betrayed their expectations, becoming an interpreter, a freelance interpreter. And the natural choice was to stay at the university, but I didn't.
Usually you speak Japanese with your dad, but sometimes when there are Polish people around, you switch to Polish to include everyone to make sure that they understand as well. How does that switch feel like to you when you have to start speaking Polish to your dad that you normally speak Japanese to?
Switching into Polish while talking to my father feels very strange, because I'm used to a certain distance that Japanese language creates between speakers. And when I switch into Polish, I feel literally like I'm face to face with my father. This is almost a physical experience, physical feeling that I'm too close. I'm not used to be so close to my father, and it's strange. So, of course, we can speak Polish together. My father speaks Polish very fluently, but it's very unnatural and strange for me.
What about your mom? Because she is Polish and she grew up speaking Polish, but she raised you speaking Japanese. How do you think she felt that change in distance when you were speaking Japanese with each other, even though sort of her native language was Polish?
I think speaking Japanese to us, to her children, was a commitment and a decision, of course. But whenever we had a chance and our father wasn't there, we spoke Polish. So I think it was natural, of course, more natural for her to speak her mother tongue to her children. But he was very natural in her Japanese. And with my mother, I didn't feel this difference when I spoke Japanese to her and when I spoke Polish. But with my father, I always spoke Japanese, and it was the most natural way. So that, I think, that made this switching moment so physical and drastic.
Is it because you spoke both Polish and Japanese with your mom, so you were used to kind of switching?
Yes, and speaking Polish with my mother was natural, and it wasn't making this impact. So I think that was the reason, yes.
Mm-hmm. When you translate between Japanese and Polish for work, how do you translate that emotional distance?
I think when I translate, interpret into Japanese, I'm trying to use more indirect expressions, not to be so very straightforward. And the same when I translate into Polish, I'll try to add more words, because in Japanese you need less words, less gestures. You have to read between lines many times, and that's not always clear or understandable for example, Polish people. So I think sometimes you have to say something more straightforwardly to be understood. So I think these are the biggest I don't know, efforts or changes that you have to make.
Does your personality change when you switch between the two languages?
Yes, I think so. It's natural. I think it's natural. I start to move in another way, but I'm also a little bit mixed up always. When I speak Japanese, I think I'm more relaxed and in a way direct than Japanese people. And also when I speak Polish, I think I'm more polite or more indirect and caring for the reaction of my speaker than Polish people. So there is always some Japanese part of me when I speak Polish, and also the Polish part of me when I speak Japanese.
Do people comment on that? I'm wondering from my own experience, Polish people will say to me that I am so polite or so calm. Japanese people always tell me that I'm very headstrong and I come across as very direct. Do you get that as well?
Yes. Of course, not from people who know me, who've known me mm-hmm. for a long time, but sometimes when I meet people for the first time or my new friends, for example, they sometimes say, you are so polite. When I was a child, I was told by my aunt, Japanese aunt, that I speak very masculine Japanese,
mm.
not girlish, not the way a woman or girl would say in Japanese. And that was that because Japanese was taught to me by my father, who was a man. So I was told to be more like a girl when I speak Japanese. And that I corrected that. But I think I'm still, yes, more straightforward than a stereotypic Japanese woman.
Especially because words change depending on your gender. So if you're a woman, the word I is different for yes. men and women, sort of already sets a totally different tone, not to mention intonation and sort of the kind of things you would say as a woman and man as well, the vocabulary that you would use. Do you think the way we speak or the language we speak determines how we feel and think?
You definitely behave differently. It's difficult to explain it. But for example, you react differently to compliments. For example, when somebody in Japanese says, you did good, you were excellent, you always say, no, not at all. I cannot accept this. I was bad. And in Polish, when someone compliments you, you just enjoy it and you are grateful. And this is the difference, I think. For example, I think it would be easier to say by someone who stands beside you. I work with Polish people and Japanese journalist came, and I started to talk to him in Japanese, and we started the conversation, and my Polish friend said, "Wow, Toko Anna, you behave so differently than you changed so much when you spoke Japanese," and I don't see this. I don't see this.
It's not a conscious decision. You mm-hmm. just, it's part of the language,
yeah,
effectively.
Yeah, I think so, yes.
Mm-hmm. You've been translating for decades now. I wonder, how has the field of Japanese-Polish translation and interpretation in Poland changed over that long period of time that you've been doing it?
When we started translating, there was no internet. We didn't use computer at the beginning, and we just bought many dictionaries and brought it back to Poland. And we had to learn a lot of words by ourselves, taking notes. We have big notebooks with our memos till this day. And it was a lot of effort to learn, to remember. And there was no easy way to check if we translated it correctly or not. So we had to depend on our teachers, our bosses, or our friends in Japan. And it also included making telephone calls, very expensive then, or using fax after some time. So it was a hard work, but quite satisfactory. And now when there is internet, not only you can check any vocabulary, any terms, now you can also translate whole sentences on Google Translator and all kinds of translating programs. But it's more fun now because you can browse so many websites and also get photos of machines you have to translate about or check everything. And it's it's fun. It requires less effort. So sometimes I think young translators, can be a little bit more lazy, depending on programs and machines. But we still think that in the era of translating programs, Google translators and everything, there are texts or situations that can be translated but by machines or robots or artificial intelligence. But there are still texts like books, poetry, that require this human factor, this human mind and heart to translate. So it changed a lot. It's much more convenient now. It's easier to translate many, many things, texts and programs. But there is a part of world that AI cannot translate the proper way because it doesn't feel. But it changed a lot.
Your husband is also a Japanese-Polish interpreter and translator. And I wonder, did you deliberately pick someone as your partner who is embedded in both cultures?
No, it wasn't intentional. I just was lucky. We met at the university and became a couple quite soon. But it was luck for me, because it is very important that he not only speaks Japanese, but also understands Japanese culture, sense of humor, likes Japan, and we can share our interests, and we can travel to Japan, and he also feels there at home.
You told me that your dad was very good at raising you in a way that made you feel like you were very Japanese. He exposed you to a lot of things that were Japanese, but at the same time, he taught you how to leverage positively being different. And I was wondering if you can talk a little bit about that, because I think it's quite incredible how well adjusted, how well planted you felt throughout your whole life.
I think I was very, very lucky to have parents who thought this way, because in Japanese we are called half Japanese, half Polish, and it's the same in Polish. You also say half Japanese, half Polish, but my father always told us that we are not half, we are double, because we combine two cultures and we have twice as many relatives and twice as much cultures than other people, so we are a little, in a way, richer. It wasn't told in words, but we felt it, and it was first of all keeping in touch with Japanese culture, learning Japanese language, and going to Japan regularly. Every 2 or 3 years we traveled to Japan, made us feel that you are part of two cultures. And at the same time, I don't know if it was intentional, but maybe my parents felt it, that being different, because we were quite different in quite homogenic Polish society, I think my father felt that being different in this very homogenic Polish society wouldn't be easy. And since our childhood, we were taught to be very independent and solve our problems by ourselves, make friends. We spend winter, summer, and summer vacations. When we didn't go to Japan, we went to camps, and every 6 months we made new friends in new places, and also traveling through Japan, we all the time we had to make new friends. And even when I was in high school, I traveled with my brother. to Japan without our parents. And we were always taught to be very independent and strong in this way. So it made us, I think, quite self-confident about our strength and our ability to be ourselves and to live in this world without help of our parents, who, of course, supported us very much, but they raised us to be strong. So these two factors, feeling of being double, not half, feeling at home both in Poland and in Japan, and being accepted in a way. It's funny because as a child, I didn't like to pass by children groups from schools in the city or anywhere. And they always pointed at me and screamed, Chinese girl, because it was Chinese people were...
All the Asians were Chinese.
Yes, all the Asians, yes. Because all the Asians were Chinese at the time. And I didn't like it and I a little bit feared it. But my father explained them that they screamed that because they don't know me. But being different doesn't mean being worse or better. Just different and maybe interesting by that. So I stopped noticing people looking at me. I don't see them. Maybe they don't look at me, but when I made new friends, sometimes they said, doesn't it bother you that so many people look at you? And I wasn't aware of that. I didn't notice that at all. Yeah, I think this is my parents' wisdom to make us be aware that we are not worse or better. We are different, but it isn't anything bad. It's good. It's better. So not better, of course, in the sense that we are better than other people, not, but better for us. We know more people and more things, more places, so we can get inspiration from that and share it with people.
It's not like you haven't experienced discrimination. It's just that you choose to look at it differently. You choose to look at it as ignorance rather than some sort of innate malice.
Yes, yes. I don't have any memories, bad memories of being bullied or something like that. Maybe this experience with children, but I stopped fearing it. I just understood that if somebody discriminates you, he doesn't know you, he doesn't want to know about you, and that's why he doesn't understand. This is the lesson our parents taught us. And I'm very grateful.
It's beautiful. It makes me think a lot about how you create the reality by what you think. Toko Anna, thank you so much for this fascinating conversation. I really, really appreciate it. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Oh, the pleasure is mine.